Welcome to the Security Weekly News wrap-up show for the week of 5 July. Yes, it's July, and you know summer is slipping on by. Look, this week, it's all about the RCE. I mean, I was just kind of going, okay, RCE, RCE, RCE. There were so many RCE stories. It was really weird that there were so many in just a very short period of time. Oh, and a creepy guy story, and also some TikTok stuff. So all this and more on Security Weekly News Wrap-Up.
This is Security Weekly. For security professionals, by security professionals.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week. Your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News. The question is simple. Have any of the systems on my network been compromised? The answer is harder than it should be. Enter AI Hunter. Active Countermeasures has automated and streamlined techniques used by the best pen testers and threat hunters in the industry to create AI Hunter, a network threat hunting solution that does the first pass of a hunt for you to identify systems that are most likely to be compromised and scores the results on a scale from 0 to 100. You can then research those systems in depth with AI Hunter. Focus your valuable time on the systems that need your expertise with AI Hunter. Sign up for a personal demo today at securityweekly.com/ACM.
Hello, I'm Doug White from Roger Williams University. Welcome to the Security Weekly News wrap-up show. Let's go through the show topics for the week. On Application Security Weekly number 113, Mike, Matt, and John had an interview with Catherine Chambers, who's the Senior Product Manager at Erdetto, and Will Hickel, who's the Data Science Architect at Erdetto. It's just Architect Erdetto, Architect Erdetto. This segment was about data science and securing mobile apps, as well as machine learning, and how do you turn mobile app security into a data science problem? So very interesting stuff, especially for a computer scientist turned cybersecurity specialist, et cetera, but it's very interesting for everybody because mobile app security is certainly a big deal, and trying to apply different approaches to that problem, very germane. On Business Security Weekly number 179, Paul, Jason, and Matt had an interview with Juan Canales, the Senior Manager of Enterprise Security and Architecture at a private healthcare organization, and Matt Cawthorn, who's the VP of Sales at ExtraHop. And this segment focused on what response means. So we often hear the term response getting used, and people say, you know, it means all kinds of different things in different cybersecurity contexts. So how does that vary throughout the cybersecurity context? And they also had a news segment, and I was particularly interested in one of the news segments, which was Profile of the Post-Pandemic CISO. So worth checking out if you're a CISO or aspiring CISO. And always the stuff about response was quite interesting. On Enterprise Security Weekly number 190, John, Matt, and Paul had an interview with Scott DeLong, the CIO at Scott DeLong and Associates, among other titles that Scott holds. Scott was talking about the process of events organizations will experience in living through a ransomware attack, and other suggestions about ransomware. Definitely worth listening to that. If you haven't been hit with ransomware, you probably will be at some point. And so it's really always good to look at other examples of the same thing and see how that might apply to your organization. I always told people that when we were doing disaster recovery, look at how other people responded, look at failures, look at successes, and see how those things fit into your organization. A second interview with Rob Reck, the CISO at Ping Identity. We're talking about a bunch of current issues, including passwordless authentication, customer identity, and zero trust acceleration during COVID. On the Security Weekly News number 447, can you believe we've done 47 of those? Jason Woods talked about the arrest of a real Nigerian prince who was allegedly running scam operations. So imagine that. But it was arrested, extradited, all kinds of stuff. So it's a pretty interesting story from this week. On Security and Compliance Weekly number 34, Jeff, Matt, and Josh and Scott had an interview with Kimber Dowsett. The director of security engineering at Truss, about security versus compliance and recommendations for implementing security in line with or in spite of compliance. All of us have probably been there where you run up to against regulations on change and they won't let you implement the security policies you want. So, you know, it's kind of an interesting trade-off negotiation. In a second segment, Ms. Bat, who is pretty well known at cons, is kind of a famous person, came on to talk also about security versus compliance from a hacker's perspective. So they also had some discussion about breaking down barriers in the field of cybersecurity. So a very interesting segment there. Check that one out. I enjoyed it. On Paul's Security Weekly number 657, the always great Joff Thayer joined in for a briefing on IPv6, among other things. He did demo some ways you can actually implement IPv6 and IPv6 tunneling services. Great examples. Everybody had a good time. And it was a great lead-in if you're going to plan to watch his webcast from Black Hills, if you haven't seen it. There is a slide in the segment for that, or you can just go to Black Hills and get to it. I thought his segment was real, or his segment was good, but his webcast was even better than that. I did enjoy that. And if you're interested in IPv6, definitely check that out. He had a lot of good comments about both IPv6 from just a, like, how does it work perspective to how do you secure it, what kind of issues are there that are different than IPv4. The second segment was with Terry Dunlap, the co-founder of ReFirm Labs. Awesome segment. Terry told Paul got Terry to tell the story of getting arrested at 17 for credit card fraud, how he ended up working for the NSA. He and Joff traded some, you know, stuff about which buildings they worked in and all that kind of thing. But and then they talked about I was there too. So we talked about IoT security quite a bit, and we even got to talk about underwriting and what it would take to force security into the IoT sphere. So that was a lot of fun to me. I thought that was a really, really great segment. We had a lot of hosts last night, so there was a basically all the discussion focused on all this RCE stuff I'm going to tell you about as well. But the news segment was always fun, and when we had more people, it was even more fun. So it was well worth watching if you weren't there live to check it out. And there were a lot of fun on the Discord server as well last night, whether it was with obscure references to Broadway shows, which I kept throwing out, or whatever. But if you weren't joining in on Discord, you did miss that out. So you should check out the Discord server if you're interested. And I did make an obscure joke about Joff being spelled Goff. Or pronounced Goff, and nobody got that. So if you have to explain the joke, it's a bad joke. The cognac that we were drinking was Francois Voyer XO, and it was really good. So yeah, it was a fun show. My favorite threat of the week then, so this is for you, Katie. My favorite threat of the week is going to be TikTok. Not because it's a threat, although it really is, but it's. I think the reason I put it up as a threat was because of all the overblown rhetoric around these apps and the targeting of TikTok in particular as a huge risk, while hundreds of other similar apps that do similar things are out there as well. I mean, I have no problem with calling TikTok a threat because it is a threat, but there's a lot of other apps as well. So singling out this one app and saying, you know, this is an issue with TikTok, to me just seems, like rhetoric. The basic problem that is being referred to in TikTok and a lot of other apps is that this app can exchange information with other applications, and in particular, TikTok can capture clipboard contents on your mobile device. Now, lots of apps do this, and if you go out and Google this, you'll find a listings of apps on whatever platform you're using, from the New York Times, to Tencent Games, and on and on and on, that all exchange information across applications and can subsequently capture information from the clipboard. And so that sounds bad, and it kind of is bad. I don't really like the idea that some app is capturing what I copied or pasted or am planning to copy and paste. Think about whatever was the last thing you copied. So when you use your phone, what was it? Was it a password? Was it email? Don't know. Well, then it could be a problem. So it depends on how you use that. But what other apps can have information? And you know, now there's also a transference problem as well, because if one app captures it and it can share it with other apps, maybe the other app is talking to the first app. So you don't really know. But TikTok and others may have captured this information off of your mobile device. Now, the theory is that these apps may want to use this information as a better approach to advertising. So if you've ever copied and pasted something and then suddenly you saw on the New York Times ads related to what you copied and pasted, a lot like the problem with our friends whose names we cannot say, who listen to everything we say at home. And when you start talking about, you know, exotic lingerie, and suddenly you're getting lingerie ads on your Facebook page, you're going, wow, that's really weird. It is fun to try, so think up strange things and say them in front of our ever listening friends in your home and see if you start getting ads for that. You can, of course, paste funny things into your clipboard or copy things into your clipboard and paste them and see if you can get weird responses from New York Times or whatever as well. But then we have to add the specter of China. And if you haven't been following the world news, you know, China is in control of lots of things and lots of apps. So whether if you develop an app in China and you're using that app here in the United States or in France or wherever you happen to be, theoretically, the app may well be routing its information through a server in China. And those servers can be controlled by the government in China. I'm sort of making fun of this because I was accused of saying China a lot the other day on my news show. But all that, including the People's Liberation Army, could be collecting this information. Who do they share this information with? Do they share it with Hidden Cobra in North Korea? Do they share it with the GRU in Russia? I don't know, and you don't either. So what is this information and what's being shared? Well, it's not clear. Is it a threat? That's also not clear. Don't get me wrong. Any app that is collecting information off your mobile device, regardless of who made it or where it's housed or where it sends information, to me is a threat, because that means it could be collecting other information about you and sharing it with you don't know who. So my complaint about all this is, why single out one app? India picked 59. I don't know how they picked those 59, but they picked 59 apps and then say they're threats, when there are literally hundreds and hundreds of apps on the App Store that were made in China, Russia, Nigeria, I don't know where they're, the Ukraine, I don't know where they were made. I don't know who controls them. Even if they were made in the Ukraine, maybe somebody's actually got it hosted on a server in China. So if Apple puts something in the Apple Store or Google puts something in their store, in theory anyway, they vetted it and it meets their standards. And again, we won't get into what the standards are or whether they're good or bad. But if you're talking about banning TikTok and that's the thing you focus on, I mean, I don't really even know how you would ban TikTok in the United States. In China, you say it's banned and nobody can use it and they block it. But in the United States, are they going to block these things? How are they going to do that? I mean, it seems to me like it's just a lot of rhetoric that probably stems from politics, just like it did in India. India was in kind of a little kinetic engagement with China, and they suddenly banned a bunch of Chinese apps. We know that China and the United States have strained relations right now. And so, you know, I don't know. But maybe if we're going to ban those because of that behavior, they should ban all apps that do that. I don't know. And I don't know how you ban them anyway, unless Apple bans them. So if Apple bans them, then they're not going to go on your locked phone. So, I don't know. My advice to you is assess your tools, assess what your users have, and decide how much risk you want to assume. You want to run TikTok? You're assuming some risk. So, or you could get a flip phone or something and put your phone in a paint can. And now the top news from the week. Yeah, it took longer than I was hoping. Let's just lead with the RCE circus from the last week or so. So these remote code executions is just a whole collection of CVEs that came out this week. And there was a lot of discussion on this. It was about all we discussed in the news last night on Pulse Security Weekly. Basically, it's just a big deal. I think the biggie, at least my evaluation of the biggie, was probably the F5 big IP devices threat. So this was CVE-2020-5902, and it had a score of 10, which means it's pretty heinous. So this is an RCE on the edge router. So these are big dollar routers that are sitting on people's borders and managing large traffic flows. Big time hardware. So this is a compromise in the traffic manage interface that basically allows for full control of the device. And even though F5 put out a workaround, it was compromised pretty quickly as well. So this is a huge threat if you're running R5 big IP equipment. So you definitely need to be reviewing that and seeing how this impacts you and how you're going to get around it and protect yourself from this RCE compromise. I put this one back in. It was all the way from back in June, but not that long ago. So it was like June 19th. 79 Netgear routers were reported, which included 758 different versions of firmware that contained a compromise of the web server that is used for management of those Soho devices. So these are home users, and a lot of people immediately said, well, it's probably not a real threat because they're home devices. But then you start thinking about, yeah, they're home devices that are connecting people back to our enterprise because everybody's working from home. Probably not as big of a deal as the F5 problem, but it was still a pretty big concern. And it's still a concern because even though they released a patch, you have to get people to patch it. And getting home Soho users to patch things is, you know, I mean, that's a challenge. And a lot of people aren't up to that challenge. And then back to this week. So then there's Palo Alto. So Palo Alto released two patches, and they actually released these for PAN OS. The vulnerabilities were CVE-2020-2034, which allows for a compromise of the Global Protect portal. Yep. Global Protect is a server that manages remote user VPN connections on the router. So the other vulnerability was on PAN-OS was CVE-2020-2030, which allowed admins on the device to execute some operating system commands as root arbitrarily. To me, that was not as big of an issue because it now involves you having an admin access to the router. But I guess if you use the first exploit to get remote code executions on via Global Protect, you could certainly then use these to execute commands as root. So both these were discovered by Palo Alto. And again, this is probably a critical patch on the Global Protect portal. If you read Krebs on Security or CISA or any of those over the weekend, they were saying, don't take a holiday on July 3rd. You know, you need to patch your devices. And then, are we done? No, not even close. Then there's Juniper. So Juniper revealed for Juniper a sustainable denial of service attack, which you can cause on Juniper devices by crashing the RPD, which is the routing protocols tabling for Juniper if they're running BGP. Well, guess what? Juniper Edge Router, a lot of Juniper devices are running BGP on the outside interface. You could send these kind of odd BGP packets there, although they're legitimate BGP packets. It creates a conflict in the framework control, which decides which packets are going through the router and which ones are not. And that conflict then can essentially cause a denial of service attack that is sustainable because it's kind of like a ping of death attack where they just keep sending the same traffic over and over again and it keeps causing it to crash. Again, Juniper has patches for this, but now you're talking about patching a big time edge router. And that's really challenging right now because everybody's working from home. So it's somewhat of a problem. And this was CVE-2020-1640. I put all the CVEs on the wiki. So if you want links, or you can obviously just type them in yourself. And then there's Citrix. It just keeps going. So this one is CVE-2019-19781. And this was a Citrix NetScaler device. That's an old CVE there. I got a new one too. But basically this thing has sort of resurfaced with five new CVE numbers, 8191 through 8196 in 2020. I put an article in the wiki that walks through an attack using these CVEs. And again, it caused a remote code execution to be possible on NetScaler devices. So more. And just in case that wasn't enough, so if you haven't had enough RCE for the week, there was also a Zoom Zero Day that was released from an outside source that preferred to be anonymous that allowed remote code execution on Windows. But there was some good news in this one. It only works with Windows 7 and older products, which are all end of life. We all know that. But basically, no one ever uses end-of-life products, right? You don't have any users out there that are using Zoom and Windows 7. No way. But the truth is, of course, that almost every enterprise ends up having some end-of-life products involved somewhere. So if you've got people running Zoom and they're running Zoom on Windows 7 or older platforms, then this was an actual... It's a kind of squishy zero day from my perspective from reading it. But the article that I put up provides links to some ways you can prevent this from happening if you do have those old products in place, and so forth. And yet one more, not done yet. Cisco Small Business and Managed Switches produced CVE-2020-3297, which was yet another web-based interface for management that contains a way to brute force the session identifier. So this is about entropy and being able to guess or brute force the session identifier. If you can guess the session identifier someone's using, you can hijack the session. So internally, that means that one of your people is hijacking a session against this switch. Externally, it would be really, really bad if you're allowing this. Now, you know, there are patches for this one as well, but only if you have a service contract. So nasty. This is a bad week to be in the routing and switching business in general. Please protect these things. You know, put this stuff in management networks and don't let those web servers that are on all these devices now be running at all unless you really need them. And if they are running, put them in a management network. Jeez, I see that so much. I've seen that in so many audits where they've got, you know, switches that have nice little GUI interfaces that you can access. And a lot of times people don't even secure this stuff because they say, oh, who would attack my switches? And then you get somebody who attacks your switches. I did one of those at a high school once, and the people had compromised the switches. And because they compromised the switches, they were causing all kinds of chaos. And nobody knew how to fix it because they weren't sure what was causing it, but it was the switching. So, you know, and patch. I mean, you know, really, I know it's a challenge, and you've got people working from home, and they're connected all the time, and that makes things really complicated. And one more, Apache Guacamole allows total remote control that is based off of some of the services that Guacamole accesses locally, like RDP, in anything version 1.1.0 and older. So if you have an older version of Guacamole running, you are subject to this particular compromise, which can allow total control of the server that is hosting Guacamole. That one is CVE-2020-9497. So basically we're doomed. Or we could patch and put stuff in management networks and maybe prevent some of these things. But, you know, hey, I mean, if you've got web servers on border routers pointing at the internet, good luck. I mean, that's just scary, even if it's not got problems. And finally, rant finished. And finally, I saw this story, and I saw a headline that said, creepy computer vendor. I was like, imagine that, a creepy computer vendor. So a creepy computer vendor, always a bad name for, you know, to be associated with your business. But basically what this person was doing was they were spying on customers who bought their equipment in Spain. What this person did was they went around to trash heaps and I guess dumpster dived old laptops, and they got the old laptops out of the landfill, cleaned them up, and sold them to people. So I guess, you know, you could put that in the clever business idea, sort of the old-fashioned junk man kind of concept of, you know, the person who came around with a cart full of junk, and if you wanted an old, you know, rusty skillet or something, you could buy it pretty cheap. What the people who bought these used laptops for deep discounts didn't know, I guess on top of that they came out of a landfill, but I guess he cleaned them maybe, I don't know. But what they didn't know was that he apparently or allegedly installed software that allowed him to then remotely access the cameras on these devices later. So in January, a woman said someone was controlling the camera and contacted the police in Spain. They investigated and they went right after the person who sold her the laptop. Which I presume means they looked at the laptop and found whatever he had installed. And when they went to his residence, they found all sorts of evidence that he was collecting video and pictures of people via their cameras. And he had videos of the particular woman who was complaining in her home that he had at his home. He did confirm to the police that he had installed this software. So look, two things. One, cover your cameras up on your laptops if you've got them sitting in your bedroom. I mean, even if you didn't buy a creepy used laptop from some guy off the back of a truck, people have compromised these things through zero days, through other malware that was installed. So cover the cameras up. You can buy those little sliders or just put a piece of tape over it. A post-it note is what I do on mine. It's cheap and easy. And if it, you know, you wouldn't need a post-it note, there's one right there. But if you buy used equipment or new equipment for that matter, wipe it. You know, I would never even imagine not wiping used equipment. So I used to buy tons of used drives. I always imaged them because you got lots of amusement out of that when they weren't wiped. I used to buy whole boxes of drives from eBay, and a lot of times they had good stuff on them to look at. But if you get used equipment, please wipe it before you put it in place. And that is the news wrap-up for the week of 5 July 2020 in the time of plague. I'm Doug White from the already online cybersecurity program at Roger Williams University, and we'll see you next week on the network that never sleeps, Security Weekly. Read the science, and please stay safe.